Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everything you remember must mean something. So what does that thought mean?
Adrift with Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port.
Hello!
Hello!
So it's another episode where we're not in the same room as each other.
I know.
Do you want to describe where you are?
Yes, I'm in my living room. And the baby is asleep, so I'm not talking too loudly. And Rusty is on the sofa by me.
So you're not going to do any...
That's the dog.
Rusty, yes, the dog. Rusty Scruff, yes. You're not going to do any shouting on this week's podcast then?
I was going to do a thing like in a bit where I was screaming, but I'm not doing any more.
Because you don't want to wake the baby up.
No.
And it's his first It's his first birthday tomorrow.
Yes, it is, yeah.
What are you doing?
I think we're going to the zoo.
Oh, have you looked at the weather forecast?
Yeah, it's very clement.
Oh, that's good, because I took my son to the zoo again this weekend because he's gone mad on animals. I know. I went two consecutive weekends and it was drizzly and it was actually quite depressing.
I think whatever it is,
on a nice day, you see all the animals out and they're enjoying themselves and you're thinking, zoos aren't that bad after all. And then you go on a drizzly day and they're just sort of huddled in these small spaces looking depressed. And it's kind of the reverse. So you're in your living room.
Yes. Do you want to describe where you are?
Yes. I am in Salford, twin city of Manchester. I mean, it's not twinned with Manchester in the same way as Leningrad was twinned with Manchester back in the day. I mean, they're right next to each other, but people from Salford get very sort of, they take umbrage if you describe Salford as Manchester, but I just thought I'd better explain that for people who don't know. And I'm up here working for the BBC this week. And if you are a British person who pays your licence fee to the BBC, you will be glad to know that they are not spending it on lavish hotel rooms for the talent.
No.
Man, this place is grim.
Really?
And it's not just that it's grim, this place. It's like this bad room with a bad view. So I sort of checked in, dumped my suitcases down, looked out the window, and here's what I could see. I could see a car park beyond which was quite a high brick wall, and beyond that was an office building called Magnetic House, which is every bit as charming as it sounds.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, you can kind of hear the distant rumbling of the A56.
But you've got a window. What more do you want? I'm picturing a single bed. Am I right?
It's two single beds.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. I'm on one of the two single beds at the moment.
Okay. Good.
Cross-legged. I do wonder what that is, what it is about me when I walk in and the receptionist sees me. And obviously they're making decisions about which rooms to give to which people. Yeah. What is it about me that makes them think, oh, we'll give him a terrible room with a terrible view? Because on the other side of this hotel, there are some windows which look out onto the canal and across the quays, which is sort of a nice view in its way.
I once stayed in a hotel room where it had a window and the view was out onto the reception, to the lobby. Honestly, it was an internal window. All it did was look out onto the lobby. It was very bizarre.
There's another hotel here in Manchester called the Britannia, which I've not been in, I don't know, 25, 30 years or whatever. But they used to have rooms which were in the middle of the building and they would have pretend windows. So they have curtains, and then when you'd open them, there'd be like a really terrible painting of the New York skyline.
So you'd probably get that room if you stayed there.
Yeah, but what is it about? I mean, I feel it's the same thing. Back in the day when you would go, you'd have to check in at the desk in the airport. There's something about me. It's the opposite of those people who get upgraded. There's something about me that they see me and think, what is the worst possible seat? Even if I'm the first person to check in, if I got to the airport 3 hours early. And I have to say, you know, now it's a lot better because you can go online. And you can change your seat. But even bearing that in mind, I still think the computer algorithm tends to give me a terrible seat and I need to change it.
Even the computer knows.
Yes, they're all out to get they're all out to get me.
Oh, I'm sorry, this is terrible.
I'll tell you something else.
Yeah.
Went down for the breakfast buffet this morning.
From the buffet.
And, you know, I don't want to sound snobby here. Yeah. But I looked at my fellow clientele and I have a strong sense that they are audience members for the Jeremy Kyle show. Because that is filmed really close to here.
Really? So it probably is then.
Yeah, and that's not just me being snobby, you know. Yeah. I stay in hotels for work and blah, blah. And you get used to the type of person that you see. And, you know, maybe you see more people like that on a weekend. But on a Monday morning, which today is, I'm thinking there's something going on here. But I didn't want to follow them. I thought that would be creepy.
It would be very creepy. I'm glad you resisted.
The other thing I was going to tell you about is, so I got the train from London to Manchester yesterday. Mm-hmm. And at the station, I bumped into somebody I know and like. And it was nice to see them because I've got about a good 2 or 3 minutes worth of enthusiastic conversation to give to this particular person.
And you recognise them, well done.
I know. I mean, it was all going very well for me. Yeah. Until he mentioned that he was on the same train as I am.
Going
to the same destination. So I think,
Oh, God.
So, and he was travelling with somebody else I know and sort of don't know that well, but like. So I said, oh, I've just got to go off to Marks and Spencer's and get myself some veggie Percy's and... For the journey and a newspaper, but you know, have a good trip. And he says bye bye.
Great.
So then what I do is I retreat and I watch him from the distance.
Yeah.
And then when they announce which platform our train is going from, I sort of follow them but hang back.
Yeah.
And until we get alongside the carriage that I'm booked to travel in.
Yeah.
And once they walk past the door of that carriage, do I think, okay, it's safe for me to get on? Because I was so worried that they were going to be in my carriage and they'd say, oh, come and sit with us. And then I would have had to make small talk. It was a Sunday, so there's engineering work going on. Oh. I would have had to make small talk for the best part of 3 hours. So that's what I did. Well, luckily, one of them has quite distinctive hair. So you can sort of spot him from a distance. So as soon as they walk past the door... Of my carriage, I got onto that carriage, and then a terrible thing happened.
Oh no!
They then got on at the far end of that carriage.
Oh no! So they just got on at the different end of it.
Yes. So I sort of squatted down in my seat. But what I didn't realise was my end of the carriage was where the toilet was.
Oh no!
So there were a few occasions when they sort of walked past me, and we had the awkward, "Oh hi, how you doing?" Although they didn't invite me to come and sit at their table, which I am feeling slightly aggrieved about, even though it would have been hell on earth for me.
But you're still justified in being annoyed.
Yeah.
Later, when you go for a walk, you can take the show with you so that you're not left with your thoughts, because we know what's going on there, and it's just, it's quite scary. You should probably consult a doctor, or you should maybe get a dog and then walk with your dog, or steal a dog, but just dogs can help you because they suck up your dangerous thoughts.
Adrift with Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port.
Annabelle.
Yes.
You've had the correspondence for this week's podcast redirected to your living room because you're in your living room, and it seemed easier than having it redirected to Salford. How's it looking this week?
Yes, we have correspondence. I almost said bulging then.
Oh, that would have been lovely for listeners to the old radio show.
Oh, I know. But yes, we do have some.
Good. And if you haven't yet shared your story, we'd love to hear from you. I will give you the email address at the end of this if you don't already know it. So what have you got?
Okay, the first one is from Distinguished Professor Jenna Nicholas. Having been socially inept and painfully introverted all my life, every single school report I ever received had the word quiet scrawled across it. I got to 30 and had something of a little breakdown. My anxiety with just about everything in life and my general low mood had caused all the plates I spent a lot of my energy to keep spinning to suddenly all crash. One thing that helped me slowly climb out of that trough of despair was walking. I started off slowly, but eventually was doing miles and miles, reconnecting with myself and generally being mindful. During one episode of post-hike elation, I thought it would be a great idea to book myself on a walking holiday. It would be a challenge, I told myself. Most of my friends were married and reproducing by this point, and I hadn't been on holiday in ages. Before I knew it, I was booked onto a solo traveller trip to Marrakesh and the Atlas Mountains. It didn't take long for the panic to set in, but I'd paid the money, so I wasn't not going. The trip was nice enough. There were 13 of us, all solo travellers, apart from one married couple from Switzerland who generally kept to themselves. We spent 2 nights exploring Marrakesh before transferring to a little Berber village high up in the foothills, from where we would be setting off onto some challenging hikes. As part of a sustainable tourism scheme, the holiday company had paid for a hammam to be opened in the village, where some local Berber women supplemented their household incomes, giving treatments to confused tourists. Hassan, our walking guide, explained that the hammam was basic and that the women only spoke Berber, so the pidgin French and few words of Arabic we knew between us were definitely not going to do us any good. The ladies were to go first, and then the gents would be seen by male hammamists. Not quite sure what the noun for this particular job is. We arrived at a very small square building, which turned out to be 2 rooms. The first was like a school changing room, where an ancient-looking lady signalled that we should get undressed by pulling at her own clothes. We looked at one another, unsure how undressed she meant. I was only in a vest and shorts anyway. It transpired that we were to strip to our underwear. I was uncomfortable at this point, but never one to rock the boat, did as I was told. She then indicated that we all had to take off our bras. What was going on? Surely this level of disrobing would be done in the privacy of the second room when we all had our treatment. No, this was not what happened at all. The memory still makes me cringe ever so often. We had assumed we were all going to take turns in the room, having the treatment whilst the other 4 waited in the changing room. The reality is that the 5 of us were marched into a windowless room, tiled from floor to ceiling like something from a low-budget horror film, wearing only our knickers and clutching our chests as if though our lives depended on it, to be greeted by 2 more women who, through a complicated series of gestures, we established were the ancient woman's daughters, and a row of plastic buckets filled with water. We proceeded to take it in turns to be pulled about, scrubbed down, and made to lie on the floor and being splashed down with water of various temperatures from these buckets. I remember laying on the tiled floor, breasts in armpits, legs in the air, as I was being stretched out by one of the daughters in front of 4 very startled women who I'd only met that week, wishing that the ground would swallow me up whole. I don't know if it was my innate drifterness or being very, very British that meant I just did as I was told and didn't once question what was happening. Maybe it was a mixture of the two. Needless to say, it was quite the bonding exercise for us all. Not that I recommend similar team-building days. The whole encounter only lasted about 20 minutes and cost what was probably the equivalent of £3.50. But 3 years later, I still remember it with a weird mixture of amusement and stomach-churning shame. And a very vivid picture painted at the end there.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. Yeah, that was great.
Okay, this is from Paul in Leeds. I grew up in Lancashire and went to uni in Leeds while taking up a part-time job in a bank. At this bank, more often than not, 2 people would be sent for lunch breaks at a time. Lunches were 1 hour long, there was no TV, no radio, and if it was raining, nowhere to go. One day, not long after I'd moved to uni, I was on a lunch break with another cashier called Lizzie. During small talk, I found out that she was also a student and that she'd grown up in London. I'd never met anyone from London before. Not many Londoners come to Wigan. Up to that point, everyone who I'd met that had initially told me they were from London turned out to be from somewhere near London, like Reading or Tunbridge Wells. But Lizzie said that she was from actual London. My response to this was, "Wow, you grew up in London. Can I ask, is your snot black?" Lizzie, "What? Me? It's just, I heard that there's so much pollution in London that if you live there for too long, then your snot turns black. Is your snot black?" Lizzie, no, my sot is a normal colour. Well, I guess now I know. Poor Paul.
Okay, is your snot black?
Well, when I grew up in Essex, I grew up on a dual carriage, a sort of main J road, and I always had black bogies.
Is that right? But now you live on the outskirts of London.
Now I live on a cul-de-sac. Things are very different in London. It's not black.
You're the only person who moved to the big city. And your snot got less black.
Yeah.
I say the big city, Was there one more?
Yes, this is from Simon. When I was 15 years old, I lived in a small village in the middle of East Sussex where there was very little to do in the evenings. This meant that the local video store was often packed with locals looking to rent the latest titles. The store wasn't very big and probably had a maximum capacity of about 20 people. One rainy Saturday evening, myself and three friends decided we would rent a horror movie. We got to the video shop and found that because of the rain, it was particularly busy, making it difficult to browse. I recalled that I'd seen a horror movie a couple of years ago called Ghoulies and that a sequel had been recently released on video. I figured, as we were struggling to see what was on the shelves, I would just ask at the desk if they had it in stock. I joined the queue and slowly reached the front with three or four people now standing behind me. The owner of the shop asked if he could help, and without thinking I said, "Hi, I was just wondering if you had Ghoulies too." The shop assistant looked at me with an awkward expression, then replied, "I hope so." At which point, all of the customers in the store burst out laughing. I left the shop, leaving my friends behind. I never returned to the shop and instead took two buses to the next nearest video store, making it a 2-hour round trip.
I'll tell you what it is about that story that makes it so good. Yeah. It's the two.
Yeah. Isn't it?
It's so great.
And for me, in any story that ends in you making huge detours that involve several hours to avoid going to the thing that's on your doorstep, I very much enjoy it.
Yeah, in fact, we should throw that out as a topic.
Yes.
Making a detour to avoid embarrassment, as well as all the other stuff, just your failed social interactions, please. If you haven't yet emailed us, please do. As I've said before, sometimes people say to me, "Oh, but the email you read out is so good. Mine wouldn't be that good." It would, honestly. Just tell us the story. It's the stories that are the thing. So please send us an email. It's hello@adriftpodcast.com.
When you stop thinking, your mind begins to start loving. Adrift with Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port. Oh, touch it.
Annabelle P. Have you prepared a story?
I have, yes.
Are you all settled onto your sofa and ready to tell us a story?
Well, actually, I'm sitting at the dining table.
Sorry, really, to
ruin the image.
Oh, I had you all sort of like snuggled up, cat-like, on your sofa.
No, I'm not as relaxed as that. No.
Well, as I said before, I'm sitting cross-legged on a bed in only my underpants.
I'm imagining it's quite a thin mattress as well. Am I right?
It is. Yeah.
Has it got quite a waxy kind of sheet on it as well?
Yeah, and like a strange blanket across the bottom, the bottom quarter of the bed, which acts as some kind of restraint.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay, my story.
Yes, please.
Okay, so it's about attaching human emotions to inanimate objects.
Right.
I don't know if there's anything that's more insane and also more normal than this. I think a lot of people have felt guilty throwing something away that was once much loved. Or people do stuff like if you drop a pea on the floor and then you put it in the bin and then you put another one in there to keep it company.
Yes.
This kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think there's nothing more insane, but nothing more normal.
Yes.
My last flat I lived in for 8 years. And in the last couple of years of that, my then boyfriend and I would talk about selling it because it was so tiny. But whenever we did, I would make him do it in hushed tones or whispers, as I felt terrible about the flat knowing, which is just silly. As you know, I really should have given it time to prepare, get used to the idea. Imagine how shocked it felt when we just one day went with no warning. He probably said through tears to the neighbouring flat, "I just had no idea it was coming." was when I was living in that flat that I used to go to that gym that I told you about before, where the automatic doors wouldn't ever open for me. And I would cycle there. And when I pull up to the cycle racks, I'd leave my bike next to one that I thought it would get on with. Like there was often... There was often a big motorbike standing at the end, and I'd never leave it next to that. I was worried that the motorbike would scare it. But if it was like maybe an old-fashioned bike with a basket, I think, oh, she looks nice. They'll get on. I'll put my one next to that one. But I think my most difficult instance of this was one year just after Christmas. And it was a year when we'd had a real Christmas tree. And it wasn't a perfect tree. It was very bottom heavy. I think my boyfriend bought it as he felt sorry for it. You know, it was a bit misshapen compared to other trees.
We've all done it.
I mean, either that or it was cheaper. I don't know. But I really loved it, especially as we always had a fake tree when I was growing up. And it was a very obviously fake one in that it was silver. We didn't go in for classy Christmases at my house. My dad got so carried away one year that you couldn't see the ceiling, like actually couldn't see it. It was just endless crisscrosses of homemade paper chains and tinsel and lots of hanging foil things. Although I should point out, we weren't one of those people that had the stuff on the outside of the house, just on the inside.
He's got boundaries.
Yeah, he has got boundaries, thank goodness. So a real tree, it still feels quite special to me. And I really love this bottom-heavy, imperfect one. When it had to be taken down before 12th night, as it is, like otherwise you have to keep it up till you die, don't you, I think?
That's right, yes.
So it's around this time when I was walking home from my tube station after work. It's about 9 o'clock at night. And about one street away from mine, I saw my tree just like lying in the street. I mean, I'd recognise it a mile off. If I had better eyesight, that means I could see a mile away. I'd definitely recognise it a mile off. So what had clearly happened was that my boyfriend, knowing that it was nearly 12th night, he'd taken the tree down and having little faith in our local council garden waste collection scheme, had decided to dump it in a street, one street away from ours, so it wasn't in our front garden for the next 2 months. So it's getting to the point, I'm walking towards it, it's getting to the point where you have to walk past my tree that's been dumped in the street. And I'm starting to feel terrible because, you know, as I said, I'd love this tree. We spent the whole Christmas together, apart from when I went away for a week, actually over actual Christmas. But apart from that, the whole Christmas trip together, like, I was the only family it knew. So I feel really sad about seeing it in the street. But I'm also thinking, isn't what my boyfriend has done illegal, like fly tipping? So as I went past my tree, I had to blank it. I had to walk past it and pretend I didn't know it while it lay there abandoned and all bottom heavy on these cold winter streets and watch me, the only family it had ever known. I was probably like some kind of mother figure to it. I had to watch me walk past. Like it had probably seen me coming and thought, oh, thank you. Thank you, there is a God. She's come for me. She's here. She's almost here. I'll be in her arms. She'll take me home. She's here. What? She's walking past. She didn't even look at me. What did I do wrong? Why? Well, I walked past, like eyes straight ahead, totally blanking it. I did find out later that it's not actually illegal. So after that, when I went past it, I'd give it a little stroke, which was over the 2 months it took the local council to pick it up. So he was quite right.
Oh, that was great. I also thought as I was listening to that, I bet some of our fellow drifters have stories about, I can never say this word, anthropomorphizing. Is that right?
It is right. And the reason why I didn't use that word is because I can't say it.
Yeah, it's such a difficult one to say. But ascribing human characteristics to inanimate objects. If you've got any stories like Annabelle's there, then please do send it to us.
Until we're all caught up pretending we know what we're doing, which we don't, obviously. It's quite apparent. Adrift.
It's that part of the podcast where if you are somebody who supports us on Patreon, you can bask in the glory. You can feel good about yourself. As we start hectoring your fellow listeners for money, you can think, doesn't apply to me. I'm one of the good ones. Yeah. But it really helps us keep the podcast going. So if you are able to support us, it's patreon.com/adrift. I've been having to think about Patreon again recently, and we're about due another video, aren't we, Annabelle?
Oh, gosh, yeah, I'm sure we are. Yeah, you know, any ideas?
Well, here's the thing. I was thinking I quite enjoyed the last one where we did a Q&A from our listeners.
Yeah, yeah.
But the problem with doing that again is surely all the questions have been asked. Surely we've exhausted people.
We've had some more Patreon subscribers since then who might have something to ask.
But they can sort of go back and find the old ones, can't they? I mean, I don't quite know, but I think they can. So, I mean, we'd like to do another video podcast, but I think it's just we're going to need a certain amount of head scratching to figure out what we should do on it. But if you've got anything you would like us to do, particularly, no dancing on my part. I'm not much of a dancer.
Me neither.
You're a great dancer.
I know I'm not a good dancer because my boyfriend recently told me that I'm not a good dancer.
He's messing with your head.
Do you think he's negging me?
Yeah, I do think he's negging you. Yeah, right, I think that's exactly what's going on. There was one morning years ago when we were doing a breakfast show, and it was, I can't remember, but we've been doing it for a long time, and getting up early was sucking the life out of us, and there were all these other draining things going on at the same time. And I think we were just all ready to kind of give up on life. And then this one particular morning, George Harrison's I Got My Mind Set on You, so it came up on the playlist, and the second it started, you jumped out of your chair and danced to the whole thing in the studio, which people might think, oh, surely that's what people are doing in radio studios while they're playing music. You're just dancing around enjoying it. No, I mean, you've generally got it turned down quite quiet and you're working away. It's like being in a library a lot of the time. But it was the most atypical thing. But it did give us about another 6 months' worth of energy, that dance,
6 months.
I always think. That's what got us across the finish line.
Wow. Yeah. I just really love that song.
Yeah. It was fantastic dance.
Thank you.
But I think it's...
Maybe I'll do that for the video podcast.
Well, do let us know if you have a suggestion, seriously, because we're out of ideas.
So it seems.
So it's over to you. You can email us about that. The other thing I was going to mention as well, and I know since we started the podcast, we've been talking about this and we haven't really got anywhere with it, and that hasn't changed. But in terms of a Drift live show, I have been doing a bit of messaging. Do you remember I mentioned the Trades Club in Hebden Bridge?
Yeah.
And how fantastic it would be to do something there. I've been doing a bit of messaging with Mal, who runs that place. And initially, he'd suggested doing something. I can't remember if it was January or December, but I was worried about getting snowed in.
Yes, I remember.
So he's now looking at something more sort of spring, early summer, which could be good, couldn't it?
Okay, great. Yeah, that sounds lovely.
Me and you, Hebden Bridge, get a few listeners there. Yeah. You know, the ones who aren't local can fill up some B&Bs. Maybe we'll get a musical turn on as well. How does that sound?
That sounds great. You should definitely do it, yeah.
So I do think... At this point, the listeners just sigh when they hear us moot anything like this because they think it will never happen. But
it seems a little like we're just sort of pushing it further and further into the future, really.
I know.
Next summer just feels like 10 years away, doesn't it?
Yeah. There was that great piece of advice that I read in an interview, which was once, never agree to do anything in the future that you wouldn't want to do tomorrow afternoon.
That is the best advice ever.
Yeah. And the thing is, I would want to do an Adrift live show tomorrow afternoon. I wouldn't particularly want to do the admin that goes into it I wouldn't particularly want the anxiety of worrying whether anybody would buy tickets. The preparation. I mean, to be honest, if we were doing it tomorrow afternoon, I wouldn't be thinking about it till tomorrow morning.
You wouldn't, though.
No. But anyway, let's see if we can't make that happen.
Yeah.
Computer sounds are awesome. Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port. Adrift.
It's time for the incident, and I need to explain something. Now, because I am in Salford, twin city of Manchester, I don't have the facility to ring somebody up and chat to them like I usually do on the incident.
Right.
Because I've just got a little box and a microphone, and there's no way of plugging my phone into it that I know of. So what I did this week is I put the situation on Facebook and asked our drifters for their advice and suggestions.
Okay.
So I just wanted to explain that at the outset. Mm-hmm. So here's the story. So I've got a friend who has a 22-year-old son who's just moved to London.
Right.
And a while ago I saw my friend and he suggested that we have his son round for Sunday lunch since he's new to town. And I say, really? Do you think he'd want to do that? And he's like, oh, yeah, definitely. He really, really likes you and Sarah, and it'd be great for him to see you, Gene. So I send him a text message. I write, hi. And then the name is redacted at this point. I preserve his anonymity.
Okay.
I continue. Your dad said you'd like to pop around for Sunday lunch. How's the 7th of October? He replies, sounds great. Now, here's the thing. He replied 11 days after I sent the original message.
Oh.
By which time I'd already made other plans for the 7th of October.
Oh, gosh. Okay, yeah.
Right. So I explain this in a text message and I say, what about this date? And I suggest another date. So far, it's been 8 days and he hasn't replied.
He needs to sort out his life admin. This is not good.
Well, what are the rules here? How am I... Well, I mean, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to keep a provisional date free? How should I handle it? Has a similar thing happened to you? I find out in this week's The Incident. This first one comes from Colin Anderton, who says, this is exactly how you'd want it to play out, Jeff. You've done your bit in attempting to set a date, but now you won't have to attempt to socially interact with a millennial because he's ignored you. Perfect result.
Colin makes a very good point.
He really
it's like,
does.
It's your dream situation, really.
It really is, with anything, really. I've done my bit, but I still don't have to interact. Kate says, have you tried WhatsApp rather than text? I don't know why that's relevant, but that's the first thing I'd try. Maybe he doesn't use his texts. Well, I mean, he does use his text. He just, you know, he takes his time. So he obviously looks at them at least sometimes. But here's the thing. I will never initiate a WhatsApp conversation.
No, you got annoyed with me when I used it once. I had to send you a WhatsApp message because my phone was broken, so I sent it via my computer and you said, why are you using WhatsApp?
It just annoys
me. I think I was too old for it.
Yeah, as I've said before, the name WhatsApp really annoys me.
It is annoying.
I think I'm quite sad that nobody's really added me to any WhatsApp groups.
Oh, really?
Apart from this one guy I know who, how can I describe this without giving too much away, just in case he's listening to it? So I know somebody who has set up a little business venture, and part of the business venture is regularly sharing photos.
Right.
And he's set up a WhatsApp group to share these photos.
Right.
And I think there's only about 6 people in it. And I really, really want to mute this WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
But I'm worried, what if I bump into him and he asks me what I thought of one of the photos? All weekend, these photos in which I have no interest are just pinging up on WhatsApp. Like, nothing good has ever happened to me on WhatsApp. I've only ever found it to be an annoyance.
Okay.
All right. Mark says, he's obviously not bothered. He probably thinks his dad is meddling in his life and has no interest in dinner dates with his dad's friends.
Why don't you put it like that?
He says, tell him a date and time, and when he knocks on, don't answer the door.
That's a bit harsh.
Yeah.
I agree with you up to that point.
Yeah. Nicholas says, post him a Marmite pizza or a voucher for one. Better still, post me the pizza. This is a reference to the fact that my local pizzeria, they call it cheese and Marmite garlic bread or cheese and Marmite bread, but I mean, it is a pizza for all intents and purposes. It is so good. It is one of those foods, though, that really I wish I didn't know it existed.
Is it on your mind a lot?
Yeah, it is.
You can get more done with your life if you didn't
exist. I do.
Yeah.
Linda writes, that generation reply to messages they're interested in 10 seconds. So leave it now. No more offers.
This is all such wise stuff.
Jasmine,
I agree with all of this.
Jasmine says, ring him up, old-fashioned style.
A lucky dancer. Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
who answers their phone?
Please. Yeah. Ridiculous idea.
Anna says, I have a 22-year-old daughter. I feel your pain.
Oh.
Joanne says, you need to Snapchat him. They respond within the hour.
What?
Wouldn't I need
to send messages? I thought it was just photos. I thought it was just dirty photos.
That's it. I don't want to, you know, I think it would be untoward sending a picture of my genitals. And that's, you have to, I've never used Snapchat, but my understanding is you have to include that for it to go through, don't you?
I think so, yeah. That's very, very inappropriate.
And John Fink says, firm up a time and date and then tape a McDonald's gift card to the front door that day and spend, listen to this, and spend the day at the gun range with your buddies.
Gosh, I know you so well.
I think, John,
so
you've really got the measure of me there.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Shoo, 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 shoo. Couple of things in no particular order, apropos of nothing really. So I was walking around my neighbourhood the other day, as I do a lot, and there's a taxi firm that I've passed loads of times called Ken's Cars. And I noticed the other day it is no longer called Ken's Cars.
Oh.
It's called Ken and Gemma's Cars.
No, what's going on there?
Well, here's what I think has happened. I think Gemma is Ken's wife or girlfriend, and he's done something so bad that he said, Gemma, I'll make it up to you. What can I do? What if I put your name above the door of the taxi firm? Then will you believe me I've changed?
Yeah. Now we all want to know what he's done.
That's the plausible explanation, isn't it? The other one is a story which you were very much in the story as a peripheral character.
Oh, right.
So let me think how to tell this. So we have friends, Craig and Becky, who very recently have had a baby son.
Oh, they had their son, haven't
they? Yeah, they have, yeah. So he came along a couple of weeks ago, and we have in our possession a huge bag of clothes and baby paraphernalia from when Jean was born.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this bag has been passed on to you.
Yeah.
Around the time Rudy was born.
Yeah.
And it subsequently made its way back to us.
Yeah.
So that's the only way you're involved in the story, but you can vouch that this bag of stuff exists.
Yeah.
So Sarah sort of offloads all this stuff onto Becky. And a few days later, she gets a text message which reads, "Oh, I should explain, in amongst all this stuff is a bag." And It's a bag that when Jean was born, I think we very briefly used it for things like nappies and changing mat. But for whatever reason, it didn't work for us. So after a couple of weeks, we stopped using it. I don't know if did you ever use it?
I don't think so. No, right, I don't remember it very well. Right. Yeah.
So Sarah gets this text message, and it reads, "I think there's something in this bag that isn't meant for us."
Oh.
What the hell is it?
Yeah.
And then Becky sends a photograph.
Yeah.
Of a tiny pot containing a urine sample.
What?
So, I mean, Sarah wanted to get it tested to see whether it's hers or mine, but I think there is no question that it's hers. And the only thing I can think of in those first couple of weeks after Jean was born, she was a bit poorly and got an infection. And at some point, she must have had to take a urine sample to the hospital and not given it in or forgotten or something. And it has sat there for 2.5 years.
Well, you know what that means? That has been in my house then for over a year. I've had your wife's urine in my house.
I know.
I never looked in that bag. I'm gutted.
Do you know what I've done with it?
What?
I've put it with all the jars of my own urine that I keep.
Jeff Lloyd and Annabelle Port.
Hi.
It's a show, and it's also a demeanor.
Time now for Quandary Corner at the GLAP Clinic. Not in problematic, because I'm not in my attic. Once again, I'm on location in Salford in the Travel Tavern, and Annabelle is sitting upright at a dining table.
Yeah.
Have you got any food in front of you?
No, just a glass of water.
What did you have for your tea?
I had spaghetti.
Ah, spaghetti. Do you have any sauce on it?
Yeah, yes, it was tomato, spicy tomato and mozzarella.
It's a good sauce. It could have been alio olio. I like a nice alio olio every now and again. On this part of the podcast, you need to send us a situation that you found yourself in or regularly find yourself in, but you don't know what the behaviour is, and we will tell you the rules.
Okay, so the first one, this may have been touched on before, but I'm including it because something happened to my boyfriend at the weekend, which means that I can definitively answer this quandary.
Okay.
Okay, so Gemma Bilton says, for Quandary Corner...
Eileen Bilton!
Gemma Bilton.
Right.
For Quandary Corner, I would like to know, how do you extract yourself from a conversation? I often find myself in situations where either I need to get on with things or all small talk has been used up and I want to leave, but I never know what to say as a conversation ender, so I can then carry on with whatever I'm doing. For example, chat, oh, that's good, I hope it goes well, so yeah, anyway, starts wandering off. I need a conversation ender so I'm not standing saying so repeatedly, and also so I can get away from people when I need to get on with things. Please help.
Well,
okay, anything you want to add first?
Well, I've told this story before, but one of the most extraordinary things that ever happened to me, I went to somebody's 60th birthday party and I was a bit out of my depth. It was in a posh place. It wasn't full of people like me. It was full of businessmen. This acquaintance of mine who turned 60 introduced me to this businessman, and the three of us stood talking for a while. At some point, the birthday boy left us, and this guy just said to me, "Jeff, it was nice talking to you," and shook my hand. And then he just turned his back on me and stood facing the wall.
It's the most incredible.
I know.
Okay, so this is what happened to Tom, and this is far less audacious. Therefore, I think it could be workable. So he was in a pub and he was with a couple of friends, and they'd gone to the bar and he was stuck talking with a friend of a friend of a friend. And it was the worst possible situation in that it was a one-on-one. Now, a one-on-one with a friend of a friend of a friend is not good. So
No. They're
basically just having some small talk, which went on for a bit while he's waiting for his friends to get back. And at one point in this small talk conversation, the girl went, "I'm really sorry to do this to you, because I know this means I'm going to be leaving you alone, but I'm absolutely desperate to go to the toilet. So do you mind if I go?" And Tom's like, no, go. She's like, "Sorry, I would never normally just leave someone on their own. You're going to be sitting on your own." She made a big deal about how desperate she was, blah, blah, blah. He's like, "No, just go. So she goes, he watches her walk off. She walks off maybe 3 metres, joins another group and just carries on talking. And Tom thought, I'm going to see what happens. He did not go to the toilet again for at least another hour.
Oh, that's good. I've told you.
This is the answer then, isn't it? Just say you're desperate and then just go off and do what you want.
Well, that's the classic, isn't it? Pretending that you need the toilet. But I always then have to go through the whole charade.
The confidence of thinking of doing that, but thinking, actually, I'm not going to bother pretending.
So there's... I've told you this story before. I've got a friend called Carl who is the funniest person I've ever met. He's a brilliant, brilliant man. And he works in comedy. Mm-hmm. And he was invited to a party at the BBC of all the sort of comedy people they were working with at the time. And one of the people who was at this party was this American guy who had come over here and was working on sitcoms. And he was basically dining out on the fact that he was one of the people behind the greatest sitcom of all, Seinfeld.
Wow. Okay.
But my friend Carl is this comedy nerd, and he knows that this guy's name only cropped up on two or three episodes as some kind of co-producer or something.
Oh, right. Okay.
But, you know, he's come over here to the UK where people don't know, and he's sort of basically almost claiming it was his idea.
Mm-mm.
So Carl has a few drinks at this party, and he goes up to this guy and he says, "Oi, I've got something to ask you. You know, you're going around telling everybody that you were one of the people behind Seinfeld. I've only seen your name on a couple of episodes in the credits as a co-producer. What actually went on then?" And this guy goes, "Excuse me, I just need a piss. I'll talk to you in a minute." He then walks off and Carl watches him, and he just goes over to somebody else and starts talking. So Carl follows him and gets right in his face and says, What about this piss then?
That's what Tom should have done.
It's really great, isn't it? What about this piss then?
So maybe this shouldn't be the rule that you should do that. Yeah, because that's the answer to it.
Yeah.
We can't answer this quandary.
No. What's the other one?
Yeah, let's move on. Okay. Yeah. Dear Glap Clinic, my name is Shoshana. This is disguised.
Oh, God.
How did you know?
Just keep going.
Okay. This is disguised to prevent the identity of anyone, sorry, protect the identity of anyone mentioned in my dilemma. I am a psychotherapist in the United States of America. Please know that I am not a fan of the president and I am a strong supporter of gun control. Thank you for that. Okay, so on to my issue. About 7 years ago, I met a man who was friends with a long-standing psychotherapy client of mine. He discovered that I was the therapist for this person because we were both attending the same funeral. He asked the client how she knew me. She was straightforward and volunteered that I am her therapist. I never knew about this interaction between them until about a year later. Fast forward a year and this person and I become sort of related by marriage. By that I mean a close relative of mine weds a close relative of his. This puts us in contact regularly for family functions. Whenever I see this man, he repeatedly asks me the following. Hey, Shoshana, how is, insert full name of client, doing? Do you meet with her often? What's going on with her? These questions are always asked of me in public and the client's full name is used. I assume it's an attempt to be funny. It is not funny to me. I become extremely awkward and uncomfortable. At first, I smile and say with humour, you know I can't divulge this information. Nevertheless, he persists. These interactions go on for 6 years, every 4th of July, Thanksgivings, birthdays, holidays, whenever there's a crowd of celebrants. I become not only awkward, but also angry, but I do not display my anger. This year, at a kids' party, I finally said, without a smile and with a firm voice, I cannot talk about this. It would be unethical and illegal for me to do so. Please stop asking me about this. Fast forward to a recent holiday dinner. I'm seated next to him at a table of 10 people. He says, hey, Shoshana, how's name of client doing? She really needs your help. I have about had it. I am not one to typically hold in my feelings. Please note, I'm American, not British. I turn to face him and with definite firmness, very obvious irritation and a somewhat raised voice say the following. I have asked you many, many times to stop asking me about her. I cannot and will not talk about her. Please never question me like this again. It is not funny and I do not like it. Dead silence at the table for about a full, awkward and tense minute and a half. It felt interminable until one of his young adult kids says to me, Shoshana, I didn't know you saw Becky's mother. I say not a word, more awkward tension. And the man looks at me and says, I had dinner with, insert the name of a couple that I seen. It came up that you're their therapist. Is one of them cheating? My question to you. Do I owe anyone an apology? If you say I do, I will apologise. Oh, the power. Should I apologise to the hostess more profusely than I already have for creating tension at her table? I felt right about my feelings, but unsure about my delivery. If this happens again, should I walk away? Please guide me. How do I proceed in the future should this situation again rise? Which it will. Oh, she says, I have no doubt that it will. Yours truly, Shoshana.
Well, I'll tell you what I think you should do. Mm. You should nut him.
Nut him? Do you think Shoshana will know what that means?
Headbutt somebody in the face.
Wow, you think that's appropriate?
No, I don't think that's appropriate. Oh. But what I do think is on this occasion, Shoshana is in the right. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no question about it, is there?
None.
And if anybody should be feeling bad for the awkward silence, it should be this gentleman for pushing it too far.
Yeah.
I'm somebody who sometimes pushes things too far. And, you know, I understand what his impulse is, because sometimes if somebody says, oh, you're going too far with this joke, or can you leave it now? I don't like being told what to do. And I will sometimes like keep pushing at it even further.
So that's probably what's going on there. I think so.
Yeah, I think so. But here's what I would do if I was you, Shoshana. I would start telling everyone around town that he was one of your clients and make up some various psychological ailments and see how long it takes for it to get back to him. Say that he's got narcissistic personality disorder.
Yeah. Or some like really, really weird, creepy quirks that he can't get rid of.
Yes. Yeah. Like some really, really sexual fetish.
Yeah. Something really disgusting.
Mm, mm.
Yeah. I mean, then maybe that's not so ethical either. I don't know about that.
Well, I don't know. I think it's not ethical to divulge details about your actual clients. But I think it's fine to make up stuff about people who aren't your clients.
Okay.
Because well, you're not betraying any confidence, are you?
No. Well, then that's what she should do then. Okay, that problem solved. I mean,
do you have the power to, you know, alert the authorities and have somebody put on some kind of register?
I think we're taking it a little bit too far now. It's not that annoying.
What would you do?
I would just, I would, whenever he spoke to me, I'd just pretend that I couldn't hear. Feign deafness.
Right, yeah, yeah. Because they're American, you can almost imagine a situation where she would say slowly and calmly, that hurts my feelings, but, you know, we couldn't do that. It's difficult for us to really to empathise with somebody who is so free with being able to share their feelings, isn't it?
And he doesn't like being told not to do it. That is what's making him do it.
Yes, yes.
So you can't not tell him, you just have to ignore him.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah. If you have a situation that you would like to know the rules for in Quandary Corner, then you can email us hello@adriftpodcast.com. And that was our podcast. Live from Salford and the outskirts of London, Snaresbrook.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should thank Man and the Echo for the backing music and Emily Harrison for the incidental music during the incident. And thank you to you this week for your advice on the incident. Vince Lynch and Simon Wilcox are our announcers and made our idents. Patrick Gunning and Iwana Babu provided technical support. Kim Rainey made our artwork. And Carla Cowlett took the photos. As we said before, we'd love to hear from you. I think you're really onto something, Annabelle, with questions about detours to avoid awkward situations.
I would love to hear more of that.
Yeah, and also ascribing human characteristics to inanimate objects or anthropomorphizing. I can't believe I said that twice correctly.
Well done.
Well, I know I said it very slowly and deliberately, but even so. So we'd love to hear from you. hello@adriftpodcast.com. And if you do have a bit of money, and we're only talking pocket money here, a few pence rattling around in your pocket, that you could contribute to us on Patreon. It helps us keep the podcast going. We appreciate it enormously. Annabelle, you wouldn't be sitting at that dining table if it wasn't for the Patreon money, would you?
No, I'd be lying in a gutter.
Yeah, I mean, you could have the dining table with you in the gutter, to be fair. You just wouldn't have a roof over your head.
Yeah. I would take it with me. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So please support the podcast, patreon.com/adrift. And finally, Annabelle, do you have anything you wish to say to that Christmas tree? Maybe it's still out there somewhere, shed of all its needles, just withering away. Maybe it's just a stick now. What do you want to say to it?
Mummy still loves you.
It's probably been incinerated, to be honest.
Stop it.
Adrift.
Adrift.
On to the podications. This comes from Dave Knight, who says, "Dear Jeff and Annabelle, hello from New Zealand." Hello.
Hello.
"My wife and I have listened to Jeff since the heady days on Virgin Radio with Pete. We're enjoying the Adrift podcast with Annabelle. My wife has kept me awake laughing out loud as she read your book, Annabelle."
Oh, yeah, sorry, I left that in like in the hope I'd get a few more sales. Sorry.
He says it now sits on my bedside waiting to be read.
Oh, good, good.
The good thing couples could do is buy one each and read at the same time and, you know, compare notes.
And then talk about it, like, yeah, in bed at night. Yeah.
Dave continues, we made the move back to my wife's hometown of Napier 9 years ago when she was 7 months pregnant with our first child, Ben, 8. And now, hang on. Oh, yeah, that adds up. Sorry, I thought it was 7 years, 9 months pregnant. I was doing the maths there thinking, hang on, something's off here, but it isn't. You're quite right. You know better than I do, Dave, about your own situation. Pregnant with our first child, Ben, 8, and we now have a daughter, Sophie, 6, who are both drifters as well. Isn't that lovely?
Lovely.
You got Ben and Sophie in New Zealand. I'd love to go to New Zealand.
Yes, they would die.
I really feel like I would connect with it. Like, we went to Australia a couple of times with the radio show and we, you know, enjoyed the experience, but I don't think, you know, my soul belongs in Australia, but I think maybe New Zealand.
You're not very outdoorsy, though.
No, I'm very indoorsy, but I'd like to be indoors looking at one of those beautiful views.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah. Okay, I think I'm largely basing it on Flight of the Conchords as well, to be honest.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. We celebrated our 10th wedding anniversary a few weeks ago, and it is my fantastic wife Sarah's birthday this Saturday, the 6th of October, which was actually Saturday just gone.
Yep.
Sorry about that. Did you let Dave know?
I think he didn't. Yeah, he didn't arrive in time. It wasn't, you know, got it. A little bit of warning.
Please let her know that she is the best thing to happen to me, and I would follow her to the ends of the earth. Well, New Zealand is pretty close. Yeah, I mean, if she sort of lost the plot a bit and wanted to go and live on Antarctica, would you follow her there?
He wouldn't.
I mean, no electricity.
No way.
You know, no habitation. But, you know, I think New Zealand is pretty close. You're quite right. So happy birthday, Sarah. That's great.
Happy birthday.
Many happy returns. And I loved hearing about Ben and Sophie too. And this comes from Sean Adams, who says, hello, Jeff and Annabelle.
Hello.
I'd like to request a triple crown of podcations as close to the 7th of October as possible, please. Well, we're just a couple of days late, so here goes. Firstly, I'd like to podicate to my sister Victoria and brother-in-law Jack, who are expecting their first child on the 1st of October. I suppose extending my podication to my unborn, unnamed, although nicknamed Pip, because she was once the size of a Pip niece. Yeah, that's I think, have we ever had a podication for a tiny embryo before?
Oh, I'm sure we have.
We've definitely had podications, you know, ready for when they pop out. But there's no suggestion from Sean that this isn't for Pip now.
Okay.
So, Sean adds, the second podication is for myself, as on the 7th it's my birthday. And if you can't indulge yourself with a podication on your birthday, when can you?
Yeah.
And finally, on the 12th, if everything goes to plan, my girlfriend, my girlfriend and I will complete on our new home. So a podication to Kirsty and our exciting new adventure would be grand. He says, thanks for the podcast. It keeps me sane on my long commute between Oxfordshire and Devon. Wow, that is a commute, isn't it?
It's huge.
It's opened my eyes and ears to the world of podcasts. And as they say, you never forget your first. You know, I think there's a bit of a backhanded compliment going on there, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, you know, I didn't know any better when I started listening to your podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've heard much better ones now, out of loyalty, here I am. And we appreciate that, Sean. You're right there?
Yeah.
Just heard a bit of deep breathing in my headphones. I don't know if they're haunted. I'm possessed. So there we go. So let's rattle through these again. So there was Sarah from Dave Knight celebrating their wedding anniversary, 10th wedding anniversary, and Sarah's birthday with a little tip of the hat to Ben and Sophie. And then Victoria and Jack expecting their first child. And then there was the unborn, unnamed niece, Pip, and then there was Sean's birthday and Kirsty and the new home. And I think that's everything, isn't it?
Yeah, well done. Yeah, all of it.
Well, that seemed to go relatively glitch-free, didn't it?
Yeah, but you haven't, you know, edited it yet, put it together, out that there's terrible sound problems, etc.
We'll see. And we will be back in my attic next week, all being well. And if you would like a podcation, you can email us hello@adriftpodcast.com. Over and out.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.